mean, the conference officer of the department, I don't know whether he was even aware of the fact that the question had been asked and that, that we said, yes, there was a grave doubt. In fact, it's probably deductible. I don't know whether he was aware of it.
Okay, so he's denied of the belief.
And so now he's going up to the next level. I agree with you. I think the it's too bad that I'm going to have to go to this hearing.
Well, and maybe it's going to be pretty tough to go to the floor, too, because one of the first questions we always get asked is, which court case or hearing is this resolved?
And so there is a hearing, and I, that's why I mentioned it, that, that we're at the department level. I didn't think there would... I hadn't even been aware of the fact that anybody had even taken this deduction when I drafted
what,
the bill.
What kind of revenue impact are we talking about? Do we know?
$50 million a year.
$50 million for a year, assuming that everybody isn't going to take advantage of filing amended returns. Yeah, there's a substantial amount. That's that.
I think we better fix these dates a little differently if it's got that kind of an impact. So that, I mean, if most taxpayers assume that this was already the law, I guess all of them minus one. And if, why couldn't they if you don't fix these dates to pertain to all 3 years?
Because, Mr. Chairman, you cannot amend a return more than 3 years after the date of filing.
Mm-hmm. But how about the last 3 years?
So,
are we going
well,
back
those
to 79?
Would all be open to audit, not open to adjustment. That's why I say we've got it covered.
Okay, Senator Day?
Well, I think what you're telling me, maybe I missed, but I don't see the emergency clause on this. Wouldn't you think you'd want an emergency clause?
I can't put an emergency clause.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You can't do it.
Well,
but they're effective dates there.
Is that true? Are we raising? We're not.
That's relating to taxes.
That's relating to taxes.
Where does it say? Oh, okay, here it is. Relating to taxes. Okay. The other question in section 6, you're taking away the requirement for a sheriff to deliver. Is it subpoenas?
It's a provision that is an obsolete provision in the statute that's been there for a long time.
You're not currently using sheriffs?
Sometimes we use sheriffs and sometimes we don't, but we can under the general law that's existing elsewhere. We don't have to rely on the tax law.
Yeah. For the record, I'm Sue Martinez from the Department of Revenue. It's my understanding that we always use the sheriff to deliver subpoenas because we have to. We have a specific statute that requires us to use the sheriff's office. It hasn't been that much of an expense for us. I believe the fee is something like $10 or $15.
Well, there's this other service I've heard about. You might be able to use it. I'm not going to promote it. Those that use it get new cars. No, bad taste. But the sheriff is limited by statute to what they can charge, aren't they?
I believe so.
Isn't that a pretty good deal?
Well, I think it depends on how easy the person is to find. I know a lot of people do not like to receive subpoenas. They won't mm-hmm. answer doors. Mm-hmm. They happen to be gone. They have the children say, Mommy or Daddy's not home. So that requires the deputy sheriff to sit outside and wait for them, you know, either before or after work, or to find out where they work and deliver the subpoena mm-hmm. there.
So but as I understand it, the sheriff charges a flat fee. They do not have the flexibility to say, I'm going to charge you $25 an hour. So, in essence, overall, it seems to me, I can't envision a state employee, going out in an automobile to deliver, or, as I take it, you have to do these in person. Okay.
Right.
A state employee for 2 or 3 hours, as I recall, that's really a low fee that the sheriff can charge, something like $11?
It's something like between $10 or $15.
Yeah, and it seems to me that it would be hard put, even if there was somebody here in Salem that was relatively easy to find, by the time somebody checked out a vehicle out of the motor pool, drove to their residence and found them, delivered it, unless they're willing to do this on their lunch hour, took the car back, got back to their place of employment, and got back into the working things, or delivered 5 or 6 more, depending on how they could work it out, they could do that for that kind of a fee.
Mr. Chairman, believe it, it's probably easier and maybe in the long run less costly for us to administer it than the sheriff's office. Number one, when we are working an audit, we know where the taxpayer is. Mm-hmm. The sheriff's office doesn't. So we have immediate knowledge of where the taxpayer goes. There aren't that many subpoenas delivered. An income tax auditor, one of our field auditors, can deliver a subpoena on one of the normal audits, probably without going out of the way too much. But we know where the taxpayer works. We know how to find them already, which the sheriff's office does not know at the time.
And there is the other situation in which we are examining some records that are held in the hands of a third party, and they say, well, hey, I'd like to be protected here with a subpoena. Well, under the current law, if we're going to follow 305.210, we would have to prepare the subpoena, ask the sheriff to serve it, to come back to the bank, where it would be very nicely to prepare it and hand it to the people and go ahead with our investigation without having the delay.
Okay.
That would be the other situation that comes to mind right quick. Right.
Okay. That just...
Mr. Chairman, I have started to say we found some amendments as we go through. One question that came up about the time that this bill was, I think it had already been introduced for pre-session filing, was that we found out that when it comes to how you're going to treat refunds of federal income taxes, the law, if you'll notice in subsection 4, 316072 on page 1 on line 20, it talks, 18, 19, and 20, it says, if refunds or additional assessments result in adjustment, whether initiated by the federal or state government or the taxpayer after the filing of the original return by the taxpayer, any additional federal taxes shall be deductible by the Oregon individual taxpayer under this section in the year in which the adjustment is finally determined or paid, whichever is later. This was enacted, I think it was last session or session before, to once and for all determine a rule in Oregon how you're going to treat these refunded federal income taxes. Well, when you say individual taxpayer there on line 20, what about an estate or trust? Are they going to be treated differently? And I don't think there was any intent on anybody that would do that, so I would suggest
that... Is there a definition of individual?
Yes, there is a definition of individual, and it does not include an estate or trust.
Okay.
So we would ask that individual be deleted in that line. The other...
Well, just on that point... There's no need to reference other statutes that might limit the amount they could deduct?
No, it would not, because this just has to do with the deduction of federal taxes. That can be, those are deductible and refunds are made by the federal government to those persons under, that would be affected, or people who pay taxes under Chapter 316, so that there would be no necessity to put any other references in or anything.
Keep that in mind. Okay, any other?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day.
While you're mentioning it, I think you ought to get a new title for the bill. Your summary is. It doesn't even come close to it.
That is not prepared by us. Our summary, I think, was considerably longer.
I guess I'd sure hate to carry this bill on the floor and start to explain it and say, well, now don't pay any attention to the summary because it doesn't really have a hell of a lot to do with what we're really talking about here.
That's in this committee. We quite often have summaries that have nothing to do with the bill, and I found that to be a real pain because we've got to send the bill back to the desk, as I recall.
Yeah.
Don't we send it back and then request that they look at it because we do not have jurisdiction over the summary?
Huh. Mm-hmm.
I'll check into that, but I
don't
agree.
Care, but I just think it looks like hell to go down when you get it.
You're right. Okay.
Okay, and the other one is on page 3, line 12, ORS 317.197 has to do with how we're going to tax domestic insurance companies. And somewhere when we referred to the form, to the place with the report to the insurance commissioner, we talked about the insurance Division of the Department of Commerce on its annual statement form for the year 1968. Now, why the tax of the year 1968 got in there, I'll never know. The form has never been the same since the year 1968. It still contains the same information, but any similarity would be purely coincidental. So I would like to urge that year 1968 be removed from line 12 and we put in taxable year.
In other words, to read annual statement form for the taxable year.
Yes.
As adjusted pursuant.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just a matter, I don't know why that date got put in there. I, the typist or the writer was looking at the insurance form for that particular year and put it in.
Is that all?
That's all.
Any other questions? Why don't we just prepare all the amendments and bring it in for a work session all at once? Because we may find, as Ira goes to sleep thinking about this bill, he may come up with another amendment.
I really would like to see that.
And I'll check, could you check on the amending of the summary?
Yes.
To see what's involved, maybe more headaches than it's worth.
Mr. Chairman, I hope when this witness comes back, he will address his statements to other than just the gentleman on this committee. Otherwise, I'll have to assume that he doesn't care how my vote goes.
Oh, I think he'll change.
How are you going to handle that?
Yes, that's what I was going to ask, because it is ordinarily the... all comment for years has been directed to the chairperson, whoever that happens to be. If it's a man, it's Mr. Chairman, or if it would be a lady, it'd be Madam Chairman. And even if the
you go back and check the record, and you will hear that you addressed the gentleman. Check it.
Also, I'll verify it.
What?
Oh. You aren't going to win this, Ira.
Okay. Anyway, how do I do it differently then? This is what I would ask.
Well, you try, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
You know,
I'll try to remember that.
We apologize.
Well, I was afraid that Ruth didn't consider the rest of us as gentlemen.
Well, there is a question on that too.
That's between you and him.
Okay. Other questions on Senate Bill 65. Thank you very much, Ira.
Thank you.
Did anyone else want to testify on 65? Okay. We have to disturb somebody on 106, so we'll go to 68 now.
68 would be Jerry Bartz and Pete O'Brien.
Senate Bill 68, Peter O'Brien and Jerry Bartz.
There's an explanation also right behind the bill.
Explanation right behind the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Bartz. I'm Assistant Attorney General appearing for the Department of Revenue. And with me at the table is Mr. Peter O'Brien, who is the supervisor of the Timber Division of Department of Revenue. This bill does essentially one thing, and that is add a warrant procedure, which is similar to the other taxes administered by the Department of Revenue, to the severance tax. It allows for the docketing of a warrant once the administrative procedure for establishing what the tax is. And that then becomes a lien on the property, on the timber, and allows for a more summary collection procedure than going through each time bringing suit in the tax court, getting a judgment, and then docketing the judgment. The the matter was not brought to your attention in the last legislative session because the timber division was cranking up the collection of severance tax, and we really didn't have much to collect, and so it wasn't a problem. It is now becoming more of a problem, and I have had one case in which I have added to the problem out-of-state collections because of people coming in from Washington and severing timber and then not paying the tax, which is a very, very cumbersome process to try to collect. So do you have something you want to add to this?
No, except we think it was, I'm Peter O'Brien, we think it was an oversight because all the other tax laws, the timber tax laws and the income tax laws have this provision. So we just think it was an oversight in the original law.
You might note that in the law we have a provision for service by an agent. Now most of the subpoenas and process served by the Department of Revenue are based on an individual from the department going out to a taxpayer. So when you have service by the sheriff, you just add an extra person that has to go along with them and do this this
Mr.
process.
Senator Day?
Well, where did you, tell me a little more about Section 11, still on pages 4 and 5, particularly 5, get in subsection 4 and 5. Where did you get this language on the penalties? Is this your recommendation, or is this used in other?
The 20% penalty and the 100% penalty. I think that was picked up out of the. I'd have to check it. It probably is the same provision that's in the income tax. But I'd have to go back and check it.
Well, that's fine.
Senator Day,
yeah.
It is basically the same wording in the income tax laws.
It is.
The problem we had with that was the income tax law, they were talking about the forest products harvest tax law here. But the income tax law had wording that dealt with income words. And so we felt that would be better to implant it right into this law. The same, but it's the same provisions. The other laws.
The intention is to standardize them all.
And you're telling me that this is this would standardize.
If it's
it.
Not, I'll get back to you.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
The current penalty on income tax in excess of 3 months is 20%.
I'm saying I'm going to have to check that out. I assume that.
We increased that recently?
No, that's correct. It's in 314. That's
correct. When was that last increase, the penalty on that? Last time? No. Last session?
I don't think so.
It's been that way?
77 session, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll check that out when I get back to the office. If there is any difference, I'll notify you.
Senator Hannah?
Gary, would you refresh me on the ABCs of a warrant? Who does what and where and when, and how does it come to the attention of the taxpayer? Again, I know I've heard it before.
Well, the tax is, there's first a notice of intention to assess. At that time, the individual has an opportunity to confer with the department under a conference procedure. Then, if he's not successful there, overturning the proposed, then there's an assessment. That time he can ask for a hearing before the department. Once that takes place, then the warrant is can be issued and docketed.
A warrant, you take that down to the courthouse and it becomes a lien against the property.
Right. It's in the nature of a judgment without going through the litigation each time of going to court.
How does a taxpayer find out about a warrant being docketed?
Well, he's notified.
By your department?
Yes, right. He has notice on every step of the way.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farland. This may be a question for you rather than them. Will this bill only come through this committee, or is it apt also to go through Senator Hanlon's Ag Committee?
I don't think it has subsequent referral. Normally, no. These department or agency
bills which tend to correct problems they found in the interim and new problems that they've incurred recently simply go through this committee.
And I have a further question. Does this refer in any way to the bill that we heard in the Ag Committee having to do with...
Excuse me. I'm George Miller from the Department of Revenue. The bill that you tabled in Ag, this is the bill we were referring to that would replace that if you did not...
Okay, then I'm right. This does indeed replace that.
Right.
Well, it was... No, both procedures... We asked for both procedures, George.
But
this one was agreed by the department would be satisfactory if the other one was tabled.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But if they both passed, they would not be duplicating.
They would not be duplicating or in conflict, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Now, you released the lien for deferred property taxes, if that was necessary for the person to take advantage of that. It says so in the summary.
Yes, this is exactly the same as far as I know, as the other warrant procedures, but it would work in the same way.
Okay, now you're adding on a warrant like this, the sheriff serves in all cases.
No, we're adding a provision which provides for the alternative, where an agent would act as the sheriff, but without fee.
Page 2, line 8 is one place where it occurs.
Yeah,
I was looking at the last places. Section 14.
It's in each section of the bill. Yeah.
It's in, under either one of the laws. There's two laws involved here. It's on line 8 of page 2. What would be the reference you were asking about, Senator?
Okay, so that in any case where it says the sheriff later on, the sheriff's relating also to an agent?
Yes.
Not sure that's worded so that it says that, but it may be.
I have a question, line 20 on the last page, 6. And this again goes back to our prior testimony on that other bill. It says the amount of the warrant so docketed shall become a lien upon the title to an interest in the real property of the owner against which it is issued. Is this usually logs that are already gone?
Well, often it can be,
yeah.
Yes.
This was the original problem that you were trying to address with the other bill, wasn't it?
The other bill, we were trying to stop the machine. The problem is that a lot of the timber is harvested by people that don't own the land. So you have to have the combination.
I understand. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Trope? You say that this authority will aid in the collection of unpaid severance taxes. Say also in testimony. The changes are desirable to affect cost savings. Can you tell us how much you think these changes would save us? And cost that is going to save us, and how much unpaid taxes?
I can't answer that, Senator Pete O'Brien. But we know that it's less costly than the judgments we have to use now because we have to go around about the collectors have to go around about quite different ways because they can't just get a warrant against unpaid taxes. So, but I have no figures to answer.
It cuts me out of business for one thing. Yes, as it is now, all severance tax judgments would come through our department. I have to file suit in the tax court, and it's a time-consuming process.
Do you do a lot of that?
Well, we're beginning this.
Just beginning to.
Yes, right.
So
it's difficult to measure in finite terms at this point. If
you could study it over a period of a couple of years, you'd probably get it.
Now, we're going to apply this to the forest products harvest tax and Eastern Oregon severance tax. Both of those have been around for quite a while. Have there been problems with those?
They have. Already have the warrant procedure. This is for this Oregon, Western Oregon severance tax.
I see. They're already in the other.
Yes.
I was thinking of just adding them to the other. Okay, I'm sorry. Let it on.
Okay, Jerry, in this you're removing the necessity to give notice of delinquent tax by registered mail. Is that changing a policy that other taxes still live under, other collection procedures?
Well, we use, in some cases, first-class mail, in some places, certified mail.
But is it required in the other statutes to use a...
No, this is the same provision.
It is not currently required in the Eastern Oregon tax, for example. You do not need to...
I'd like to have Jim answer that, if I could. I'd like to have Jim Lance answer that. Jim, would you...
This is Jim Lance from the Collection Division of the Department of Revenue. I don't think it is.
Jim is with the timber section of the Department of Revenue, A&A. Jim was with collections before.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I am Jim Lance of the timber unit. And the question is regarding to the wording of registered mail. This is a case where timber taxes per se was not cleaned up when the rest of the bill was. Nothing else is required of registered mail any longer. Generally, provision of 305 is saying... last known address is considered to be due notice, and this is where it goes. So the requirement for income tax and your other major tax program has dropped registered mail requirement a number of years ago. Timber just didn't.
Okay. Seemed like we had a big debate about that not too long ago. Was that going back to registered mail? Was that the debate? I thought it was to get rid of it.
It was the certified mail where they return receipt. It isn't effective unless committed.
But then, why were we considering that if other taxes do not have that provision? Why were we considering certified as opposed to registered?
I think somebody proposed that we delete registered mail.
Well, that was my point. Isn't in most of the tax law include registered mail notification currently?
No, I think that was removed at least a couple of sessions ago.
We'll need to find that out, what the policy decision is there. Because I remember you even got the postmaster down here from downtown to come down here, and I think people were more confused after he left than when he got here about how the mail's handled. Okay? Other questions? Did you have more testimony, Tim?
No.
On the bill?
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else on Senate Bill 68? I take it from their lack of testimony that AOI agrees with this bill. That's not going to get any testimony?
It's not AOI's class that we have the problem.
Well, if we pass the bill, they'll probably join the association to get some protection. Okay. Senate Bill 106. Who are you going to get on that? Okay, Senate Bill 106 deals with the interest rate on Department of Transportation certificates from a limit of 6% to a negotiated rate. And I've been led to understand that this is when they go to the treasurer to float something to get a project started. But I don't think that's right. Steve, we just started Senate Bill 106. Can you tell us in what way the Department of Transportation certificates, how they're used? Did they go to the bond market?
No, this isn't the treasurer. No. They can borrow from one of two places, either the state treasurer or a banking institution. This is not bond, as I understand it.
And currently neither will give them the money for 6%, so that they can't borrow.
Neither would be required to.
Well, I don't think the treasurer could, since the statute tells him to get the highest or at least a prudent, make a prudent investment, and a lending institution wouldn't because they would lose money.
Right.
So, who's here? David Mooring from the State Highway Division.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. The only change in this bill is the 6% to a negotiated rate. To my knowledge, we have never used this statute at all, but with revenues declining, I suppose there is a possibility that we might need to. As it is at the 6% today and what looks like the immediate future, we wouldn't be able to get any money at 6%. So that's what the bill is all about.
Senator Trump.
Yeah. I don't know what certificate of indebtedness are, so tell me, you say you've never used it, but how could you use it?
Well, an example might be if we had a lot of work out for contract, and the contractors suddenly all double shifted, and we got to the end of the season, like October, and we were out of funds.